This is the final hooter. It's our own look at the rugby league scene. I'm Dave Parkinson. I'm delighted to be joined by none other than Mr. David Butch himself. Round of applause. Okay, it didn't work too well, but it worked better in rehearsal, didn't it?
It certainly did. Cheers, Parky. Good evening to you.
Anyway, I always like welcoming you anyway, because it's nice to have you coming in and lending your experience to the show.
Well, I'm trying. You know, my experience is getting better by the season, of course, and, you know, it's great to be back on this show as well. I really enjoy it. I really enjoy having a chat and airing out all the problems in rugby league and making sure we put all the positives as well that are going on, because there's a lot of negativity around certain things in rugby league, especially the format of what we're going to be talking about as well.
Well, we can't do much about the format, to be honest, other than talk about it in fairness, can we? You know, that's going to be up to clubs and rugby league officials, but you're tuned in to this.
The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
So we are the final hooter. We're also the loverugbyleague.com podcast. So again, welcome all. You're very welcome to have joined us. We'll just get rid of a couple of the fans in here. Not literally. I don't think we've ever had anybody sort of sat in here being a fan of us.
A couple of people have stared through the window a couple of times, just wondering what's going on.
Wondering what's happening. But we're going to be talking about the semi-finals, of course, over the next few minutes. So we've got two semi-finals to look at. Both intriguing games from their own different nuances and points of view, really. We're also going to be dipping our toes into the Super 8s, but we're not talking top 8, we're not even talking middle 8, we're not even talking Championship Shield. We're talking about the Kingston Press 1 Super 8s and League 1 Shield, which got underway last week. Some momentous occasions were made.
One of the best results of the weekend, really, you know. And it probably took the gloss a little bit off two fantastic Challenge Cup semi-finals.
One of the best of the year, full stop. I mean, you know, I have nothing against Toronto. Sorry, Wolfpack fans, I've nothing against Toronto at all. You know, in fact, there's quite a lot of ex-Lee players and a coach there. So having spent many hours speaking to those people, I really want them to do well, to be fair.
I think as a sports fan as well, you always look for that underdog, don't you? You know, and it certainly was one of those big underdog stories with York City Knights beating Toronto Wolfpack, which is a fantastic result.
So we'll come to that in a few minutes' time, but I want to spend a little bit of time concentrating on the Challenge Cup semi-finals, because we had two great games in prospect, and I think overall they delivered.
Yeah, definitely. And I thought both games were really, really close in the first half, and I think it was just that little bit of, I don't know if it was a guile or just a little bit of experience maybe in the second half. So obviously Hull FC, current holders, and when you're the holders of the Challenge Cup, you don't want to let go of it. It's such a prestigious trophy. And I think really with the whole match, it was quite close, you know, in the first half. Some fantastic scores, especially Ryan Hall. I mean, how we got that first one down, I still don't know to this day. But the try just before half time from Chris Green, it was a little bit forward for me.
Okay.
You know, and but again, it was one of those where I think the camera angle as well maybe makes it look a bit more than what it was, and that's why, you know, we can't check on the video referee for those decisions. But I think that really knocked the stuffing out of Leeds, and Hull were absolutely unplayable in the second half.
What did you make of Carlos Tuomivaavi? Because he's been over here a couple of years now, and I think that he's a crack centre on his day. And it certainly seemed to be one of his days on Saturday.
Oh yeah, I mean Hull's back line are fantastic, and when they're all firing on all cylinders, you know, there's not much better back line. You know, Hull show that in the Super League most weeks as well. And I got asked before the game of just a friend I was watching it with, and said, "How do you think it's going to go?" And I said, "You know what? I don't really know." Hmm. So because if Leeds turn up on how they can turn up, especially on the big occasion, they could walk away with this. And I thought Hull just stuck in. Of course, Leeds taking the lead early on. But yeah, once that second half kicked in, there was only really one winner for me, and it was Hull FC.
And as well, sort of like looking at it, you know, I'm a man for my stats. I love a good stat.
You certainly do.
Hashtag Parky loves a stat. Well, I've got a theory, and my theory seems to bore out. Maybe it bores people, but it bores out in a lot of respect, to be honest, with regards to rugby league games. And that is, as many times as, or as, if you can get more and more people getting over 100 metres for you in a rugby league game, you've got far more chance of winning that game statistically. And it comes out in this semi-final as well, because Hull, they had 7 players that made more than 100 metres each.
Wow.
Leeds only had 3 that went for over 100. And just to sort of like sum it up, there's some big metres amongst the backs here, to be honest, because normally you'd expect it to be maybe, I don't know, a prop forward sort of charging his way through the middle, or a second row running at an edge player or something, and, you know, getting away from your centres and your half-backs. But Jamie Scholl, he made 193 metres. Now, that is just some phenomenal figures there.
And that's just that's kick return, really, isn't
kick
it?
Kick returns mainly, yeah, I would imagine. There. And then he went sort of 50, 60 metres for a try as
he
well,
did, yeah,
near
yeah.
the end of the game, so which really sort of sewed the game up, didn't it? But Josh Griffin, 119 metres. Carlos Tuimavaa, 125. Scott Taylor, 126. I mean, like, he's a guy that's been up and about in the stats all season, to be fair, as Scott Taylor. So it wouldn't surprise me if Wayne Bennett's looking at him for a spot in the England squad come the World Cup, to be fair.
He's certainly doing the right things anyway.
Liam Watts, 110. Maybe he's a bit of a bolter, an outsider for a prop spot at the World Cup. Mark Minicello won't be going anywhere unless he's playing for Italy, I don't think, but he made 118 metres. And Sikku Manu, yeah, that's it. He made 104 metres. It doesn't matter how many times I practice that name.
I bet you open he was 5 metres short, then you wouldn't have had to have said his name, would you? They've only made 99 then.
I was, when I was going through, I thought, shall I alter it? And no. So overall, it meant that Hull ran for 300 more metres than Leeds as well. So just that work that those extra players did probably was the difference between a win and a loss. I was reading an article as well that was talking about the relevant kicking games as well, because both sides kicked, you know, pretty accurately, didn't they? And apparently Hull being able to get back possession from their kicks was sort of really, really high. They managed it something like 9 or 10 times, which is like phenomenal. Leeds managed it 9 times as well, so it just showed that was really a top class game in all facets.
It certainly was. And you know, Mark Snead kicking, you know, high to Tom Briscoe, it was causing him problems sort of all afternoon. You know, he probably won't want to watch that game back on the video of some of the mistakes that he made. But again, they were forced errors, and you know, the kick's only as good as the chase as well. And the you know, when Hull were, you know, putting so much pressure on Briscoe, you know, he couldn't do anything about it.
He's susceptible to a mistake or two. He's one of these guys that frustrates me, to be honest, Tom Briscoe, because he can be fantastic. We saw him in the Challenge Cup final a couple of years ago against Hull Kingston Rovers. 5 tries. Everything turned to liquid gold for him that afternoon. I've seen him in many games for Leeds since where he's been phenomenal. And yet I've also seen him drop a couple of clangers, and you're thinking, oh. So do you think him moving forward, there could be an element of he's got to get back on the horse as quickly as possible?
Yeah, possibly. And I think sometimes you just have to give the credit to the kicker. You know, they put it so high and in that spot, and then you've got 2 big lads trying to chase after it as well. And, you know, it's just making sure that there's the pressure. It's a big move now for a lot of clubs, is this high ball and putting wingers, you know, and centres under pressure. And, you know, that's what Hull tried to do, and it worked, you know, spot on for them, and they're heading back to Wembley again to try and retain their trophy.
Yeah, no Ben Curry this year, though, unfortunately for us here at Warrington Hospital.
No, and bad news about Ben anyway. You know, he's still struggling with a knee injury, so he's going to be out again. Not sure exactly how long for. Wish him, of course, all the best, and fingers crossed, maybe next year will be Ben's year.
Just looking back on the Leeds sort of stats, there was a fascinating one I found here. Looking at the tackle count, Jamie Jones-Buchanan, 54 tackles. Now, overall, Leeds made 328, so that's like one in 7 tackles in the game was done by Jamie Jones, isn't it?
It's phenomenal, you know, and I was actually thinking at the time, he gave away quite a few penalties as well. But if you're making that many tackles, I'm sure the percentage of penalties given away will be probably the same.
Yeah. And as well, another guy that I think was targeted well by Hull was the hooker, Matt Parcell. They seemed to get him involved and interested. I mean, I suppose it's normal of a rugby league side to target the hooker in the middle of the field because he's usually the smallest one of the forwards, isn't he?
Yeah.
And you're trying to get over the top of him and get a quick play of the ball, but obviously Hull did it extremely well and it certainly helped them along the way. From a meters point of view, and generally this fella's been really good all season, Mitch Garbutt. I know he took a bit of stick when he got here because he did look like, you know, kind of like the kind of guy that you just find in a pub somewhere, I think, didn't he? You know, unkempt beard, a bit like mine, to be honest. You know, unkempt beard and hair all over
I'm saying nothing.
But, you know, this season especially, stats have been right up there. Mitch Garbutt is amongst the best in meter gains as far as Super League players go. You can put him, Chris Hill, lads like that, all within the same sort of bracket, to be fair.
And that's what you need if you're going to be successful. You know, Leeds have had a good run in the Super League this year, and you know, you're only going to get it off the back of good forward work. And you probably look at the teams who didn't make the Super 8, and they're the ones who struggled to make the meters. So, you know, to have at least one good forward making good meters, and as you mentioned there, for Scott Taylor and Liam Watts as well for Hull, you know, they've been making good meters as well all season. So it's definitely the platform to work on, and then of course the backs always say, as long as the forwards make the meters, we can do the rest in the red zone.
For Hull, do you see him as a real threat in both competitions now? They got the way through to the final, the third in Super League.
Yeah, possibly, but it's very, very similar to last year. They were, you know, they were at the top of the Super League last year. They went to Wembley. They, you know, they won the Challenge Cup. They got that monkey off the bat of they never won at Wembley, and then they sort of just dropped. And it sometimes happens to teams who won the Challenge Cup.
Yeah, Leeds did it a couple of years previous,
you know,
didn't
and Warrington have done it as well previously, and it does maybe knock you off your game slightly. And of course it was Warrington who ended up taking the league leader shield, and then they sort of Hull just sort of fizzled out, and they never quite made you know, the Wembley final, the grand final as well. So they'll learn from that, you know, and whether that will be enough. Of course they've still got to win the Challenge Cup. They've got the Wigan Warriors to face at Wembley, who of course have beaten them before on that ground. So you know, they've got to win that trophy, but it's what they do to back that up. And even if they weren't to win at Wembley, you know, it's just getting out the Challenge Cup more and just getting back into the Super League game. But they had a few players last year who I think were running on empty towards the end of the season, and we just have to see how the fitness is. And but I think that's for all teams. But yeah, there's no reason why Hull can't win the treble.
Adam Pearson,
well, essentially, I know Castleford are quite far ahead with the league leader shield, but
well, I think they've only got to win something like two games to tie up the league leader shield.
But why Hull FC can't get to Old Trafford as well as Wembley and win the both? Then I don't see why not.
Yeah, this is why I thought, you know, like because I see that they've got all the key ingredients there, because they've got some rapid players out in the backs. You know, Jamie Shaw can catch pigeons if you unleashed him on one, I suppose. You know, they've got big size amongst the wingers. You know, Fanua, okay, he's going home, but he's one hell of a player. He's so difficult to stop, isn't he? And they've got some toughness and some players that have been there, really experienced forwards, lads like Ellis, who are coming back into form after having his own injury issues this season, who'll be wanting a really top end, considering that he's more than likely soon to take over as one of the elder statesmen in the whole Super League.
And they will, and they just look really strong, especially in that second half on Saturday. And I've not seen a lot of Hull this year, but every time I have watched him, I've been really, really impressed with how they play the full 80 minutes. And you know, why they can't do it, I don't know, because the one worry for Castleford for me is they've not really been there before. And of course they got to the Challenge Cup final a few years back, and they sort of froze a little bit in that match.
They did, yeah.
and you just wonder whether, you know, when it gets to sort of the semi-final stage of the you know, the Super 8s for a place at Old Trafford, or even the final Old Trafford, just whether they've got enough to get over the line, and whether all the skills, I know Warrington have sort of fallen by the wayside a few years when people have gone, oh yeah, Warrington will walk this, and they failed at the final hurdle. I just wonder, you know, whether that could happen to Castleford, and then maybe a Leeds Rhinos or a Hull FC or even a Wigan Warriors could just sort of sneak in.
Find out more. Go to radiogeneral.co.uk.
This is
Warrington Hospital's Feel Better Station.
Radio General.
So this is the final hooter. It's Radio General's look at the rugby league scene. We're also the podcast for loverugbyleague.com, and delighted to be with you. I'm Dave Parkinson. I'm joined by Mr. David Birch himself.
Sunday name,
yeah. Yeah, I thought best do that, aren't I? You know, we're in official circumstances now, mate.
Oh, that's because it's going on the podcast.
I'll still stick as Dave, you know, but you'll be David.
All right, okay.
That's okay.
Birchie would have done.
Birchie. All right, okay. Birchie. Makes you sound like a tree, though.
Oh, I know.
And you're not wooden. I know that. Anyway, so we've talked about the first semi-final that happened on Saturday. Hull FC back to Wembley, following a great 43-24 victory against Leeds Rhinos. I want to just switch attentions now to the semi-final that was held at the Halliwell Jones Stadium, just up the road from where we record this podcast, between Salford Red Devils and Wigan Warriors. And this was one in our pre-chat. I don't know on Love Rugby League whether you'll have seen the video that myself and James Gordon did, the gaffer. And we were chatting about that particular semi-final, and it lived up to expectations. It was another one that was a really good game, actually.
Yeah, I mean, the first sort of 20 minutes, you just, Wigan went into an early lead. They had a couple of tries chalked off as well. And you thought, oh, this is just going to be one-way traffic. And, you know, I was watching the game as part of the show here on the Sunday Sport programme. And, you know, I'm trying to explain to the listeners and say, no, it's looking like it's going one way, it's all Wigan. And then within a couple of songs time, Salford were back in it, and then they were back into the lead as well, with the penalty from Michael Dobson just before half time. Wigan were down to 12, and it was just a massive change, and Salford just showed some real character to come back. And you really thought that maybe a shot was on the cards, because, you know, you probably put Wigan favourites despite, you know, the league position. It's just the fact that Wigan have been there and done it, and Salford haven't for a good number of years. But I think the second half, the main thing that really got to Salford was Wigan just dug in and did what Wigan do, and they were very, very methodical. They tackled really well, and they just waited for that mistake. And I think that one of the big things that got solved was when it started raining. You know, It was really sunny in the first half, and then the good old Warrington weather let everybody down with a downpour. And I just don't think Salford got to grips with the wet weather game as well as Wigan did. And then in the end, you know, Wigan ran out quite comfortable winners.
I think also as well, when you get to a semi-final to, give two guys the debut in a semi-final, I mean, those are big decisions from the coach, aren't they? They brought Manu Vatavai in, who really struggled early on. And to be honest, at that time, when you were saying Wigan were dominant, they could have scored three, maybe four tries down his side, because he kept jumping in off his wing, didn't he? He's a guy that's not played a lot of rugby this season, for starters. So, and Wigan played on that.
They certainly did, and yeah, as you mentioned, Wigan were unlucky, you know, not to score a couple of times early on. He got a nice bang around the head as well on his first tackle, so ended up with a headband and a bandage. You must have wondered what he was coming to. But I thought one of Salford's better players was the other debutant, Tyrone McCarthy, who of course was playing on a stadium that he knows well. He's got good Challenge Cup history as well. He's won it with Warrington a couple of times. He scored a try at Wembley. He's also seen the bad side with Hull Kingston Rovers. He's led them out in the 50-0 defeat as well to Leeds Rhinos. So he's been there and done it. And I thought Tyrone played really, really well. And, he scored one try and only got another, straight after. I think he gave himself up on that one, didn't he, the second effort.
He's one of those guys, Tyrone McCarthy, that sometimes you can look at him and think, oh, he doesn't really look like he's doing a lot. But it's only when you analyse it afterwards you realise just how much work he's getting through. I mean, you know, I look at his stats, 29 tackles he did, and that's for a guy that only probably played about 50 minutes. So he was up there alongside some of Salford's top tacklers. I mean, the top tackler was Logan Tompkins. So again, it's like we were talking about the smaller man in the middle of the field. Wigan just ran everything at him. He made 45 tackles in the game.
Probably Joel trying to go over his brother, wasn't it?
It probably was, to be honest, wasn't it? You know, or Sam rushing past him, possibly. You know, I don't know. And then Lama Tazi as well. 37 tackles, but other than that, there's not too many other players that are around about that 30 mark, you know. So Tyrone McCarthy really getting stuck in, and to be honest, he was always one of those players that I always liked for that quiet work that he does. I mean, they've got like Flanagan there, who's a very similar type of player, who unfortunately sounds like he's now out for the season. So
yeah, bad blow for that one for Salford.
But they've replaced like with like almost, haven't they, in bringing Tyrone McCarthy in, who these days it's hard to think of him, you know. But he's been around a long while, like you said. He played that game after he'd only made his debut a few weeks earlier.
I think that was his third match for Warrington, wasn't it, in 2009 final.
So it just makes you realise how again quickly time can pass, doesn't it?
It's not bad, that is it, getting a Challenge Cup winners medal in your third match. You must think it's easy.
So suddenly we're like, what, 8 or 9 years later, whatever, you know, and you know, he's 29 years old now, and I just don't see him as a 29-year-old.
I think as well, because he's been in Australia for a few seasons. He had a small stint in Australia, then come back to Hull KR, then he went back out again. So he's not always been around and in the eye line. But, you know, when Salford, you know, made the announcement that they signed him, I thought that'll be a good signing. I said he was fantastic for them at the weekend, and I'm sure moving into the Super 8s, it'll be a good signing.
Now, again, just looking at the statistical side of it, Wigan Warriors ran for 1,600 metres in this game. I mean, that is phenomenal. And it's probably during that spell where that last sort of half hour where they really dug in amongst the weather, where they made a lot of those metres. But you look at it, and it's their entire three-quarter line that are leading the metres. So this just doesn't make sense. You know, like you say, like I said before, you'd normally be looking at like a forward to be leading on all fronts in this respect, wouldn't you? But Sam Tompkins, 159 metres. Young Tom Davis, he's such an underrated player, you know, 180 metres. Anthony Gellin, 163 metres and a header.
Oh, well, yeah.
Did you see his picture on Twitter?
Of course, I wish him well with that neck brace on. Looks a bit like Avid Merrion, didn't he?
He did.
Ball selector.
He did. What a character, though. You know, he's a nutcase, but he's a lovable nutcase. I like him.
I think he'd be known as a village, should we say.
Village. Anyway, back to these stats before I get off the
subject. Does
he still
ride his bike to the DW, by the way, his push bike?
I don't know. You know, I know he does like a push. He does like his push bike, doesn't he? Oliver Gildart, 157 metres. I think the way that he's responded after having that terrible neck injury earlier in the season is full credit to him, to be honest. And Joe Burgess, 176 metres and wearing an empty pint pot on his head after the final try.
Yeah, good skills, that one. I think that's another one that we could call village for the similar. Shame for Burgess as well, because obviously he had that try chalked off where, you know, he'd went near enough the length, and good tackle, by the way, for Niall Evolds.
But I
think Joe Burgess thinks he scored that one. I think he was still claiming that one afterwards, but I thought it was the correct decision.
If you look from a forward point of view, John Bateman leads the metres from a Wigan point of view.
No surprise.
Yeah, I really rate him. Yeah. I think that he has really been missed, and it's just a pity that his mate Farrell didn't play in the other second row. Because I think between them on both sides of the field, you've got so much balance, and you give them a bit of early ball, and they'll rampage the way across the field, won't they?
They certainly will, and of course, Bayman's played a lot in the centre as well, but he is better in the forwards, and, you know, great runner, and, you know, when Wigan have got their full strength team out and they're playing like they were, you know, they are going to be a difficult team to beat.
Does it sometimes surprise you? Because you look at Bateman and he gets an award, really, for a rugby player that doesn't actually look like a rugby player, because he's stocky more than big, isn't he?
Yeah, but I don't know. Just ever since he's come to Wigan, I just didn't see a lot of him as a youngster at Bradford, to be fair. But, you know, since he's come to Wigan, you know, he's been absolutely top draw. And, you know, I'm sure he's another one who's going to be looking at a World Cup place come the end of the season as well. But, yeah, you know, John Bateman, for me, probably one of the the best second rowers, if not the best second rower in Super League.
And Talima Tautai as well. I mean, I just thought of him as a bit of a Fui Fui Mai Mai impersonator when he first came over playing for Wakefield.
A slimmer version. Just put that one out there.
But, you know, like, he had a big influence. I mean, carried the ball 10 times, makes over 100 metres. I mean, that's some going.
It is, and he's really, really, when he's on his game, he's really difficult to put down. He's strong, you know, he's got a good step, he keeps running, his legs keep going. My only thing with him is sometimes when he does have that game, he can be really awful sometimes. Mm-hmm. He can be a penalty machine, he can drop the ball, but when he's on his A game, then, you know, again, you know, he's a great player to have coming off the bench, and just makes Wigan even stronger.
He is one of those guys that just occasionally you'll get little birds fluttering around the top of his head, isn't he? And you're sort of thinking, right, you've got to run at him now in this period where he's just switched off.
Yeah.
Because that's where I'm, you know, it's more split second stuff with him, isn't it, sometimes, you know, where he's made a tackle and he's getting back in position and he's not quite set, and you're thinking, somebody run at him because he'll give a penalty.
He's a bit of a daydreamer sometimes.
Yeah, I wonder whether we've got Daydream Believer here, and we have, I think. Come on.
Might if not, I'll sing it for you. You're
So, what can we say about Salford? I mean, like it's the first time that they've got to this sort of stage in, you know, 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's 1998 the last time, wasn't it? Against Sheffield Eagles. It was the last semi-final. The last final was 1969. And, you know, and the last win was 1938. So, you know, they haven't got a lot of experience as a club to there. But, you know, it's a great achievement for them. Of course, you know, they nearly went out the Super League last year. You know, whether people think that was the right decision, obviously, with the points deduction, people reckon they shouldn't have been in there.
You give those points back to them. They were a top 8 team, actually, last season.
Yeah, exactly. So they weren't too far off. And, you know, they have been one of the... They've probably gone a little bit under the radar because of how well Castleford Tigers have improved this year. So Salford have sort of just come in a little bit on the step. But I just think for them to get to a semi-final, to experience that, if they can use it as a stepping stone for next year, then, you know, why not? They can get to the final next year.
It could also be a stepping stone into these next 7 weeks as well, couldn't it? Because leading up to the semi-final...
It's like the character as well, won't it?
Like a lot of teams. I mean, you mentioned it with Hull sort of virtually switching off after they'd won the trophy last year. After Salford qualified for the semi-final, they virtually switched off in Super League. They lost the last three games. I saw them play against Lee and they hardly threatened, to be honest. They could have been playing till now and still not scored on that day.
Yeah.
Sometimes it affects different players and different people in different ways, doesn't it?
Sometimes, because some of the players won't have played in a game like that, and, you know, they'll think, oh, I don't want to get injured, or, you know, and although no rugby player will play to try not to get injured, it's always on the back of the mind. And yeah, as I said, I think Salford will learn from the last few weeks, and, you know, we'll just see how they kick on now in Super League.
Shall we get some post-match audio?
Why not?
Our man Steve Manning was there and he spoke with both coaches. So first of all, let's hear the reaction from the Salford camp.
Well, Ian, your thoughts on that? Close game, and it doesn't reflect the end score, does it?
Yeah, I thought it was a great game. I thought kind of the energy battle is just what Wigan won in the second half a little bit. They started the best in the first half, and then we got them back into that period as well. And I was really confident coming out second half, but we spoke that we needed to start that second half really well, like how we'd finished the first half, to be fair. And I just thought they kind of won the energy battle on the back of that, Wigan, which obviously set them up to win the game.
I suppose the fact that you were 14-12 and the slight disappointing thing that you couldn't get any more points in the second half, because obviously if you could, it could be a different tale tonight.
Yeah, they just kind of won the field position, to be fair. But like I said, that's the energy battle of being that resilient, and kind of that's a big game mentality that is sticking in it, and know that the tide will turn at some point. And I thought Wigan did that really, really well today.
But you've had the experience in a big game now. More to come from you this season and season to come?
Yeah, hopefully, like I say, we're trying to continue on a bit of a journey here to make sure that we're a successful club as well, and being involved in these games is good for us, and it's an experience that we'll not forget and that we need to learn from as well going forward. So we'll be confident that we come these Super 8s now, that can refocus us as a group and we can move forward.
And just finally, your first trips to Hull, they'll be buzzing after their victory, so you've got to pick yourselves up a little bit and hopefully do what you did earlier on this year.
Yeah, 100%. What we need to do is... refocus, really. Like I say, we've got out rid of the league and the Challenge Cup's gone now for us, so what we need to do is kind of refocus on these Super 8s and put our best foot forward and see where that takes us, and hopefully we can get in another semi-final for the Grand Finals and see if we can learn some lessons from this today.
So there's Ian Watson wanting lessons to be learned. Do you think he'll get there?
Yeah, I think it just depends, as mentioned, you know, how people, how the players take the defeat, and you know whether they can get their mind back onto it as they have been throughout the season. Because sometimes I've watched Salford a few times this year, and sometimes been unplayable, especially at the AJ Bell Stadium. They've been absolutely brilliant. So we'll see how they get on this weekend, and whether they can get a positive response. And but you know, if the players perform like Ian Watson, speaks and his confidence, and he's always very, very positive, and I think that comes out in his team, so wish him all the best.
That's what I like about Ian Watson, he was always a smart player, and he's turned into a really smart coach. So he's one of those guys that he's transitioned so well from the playing field to the coaching paddock.
We've said it before on other occasions that Salford have had so many different coaches in, and they've had so many sort of big names as well. They've tried the big name coach, and he just went for, the guy who's just been there in the background, and he's took the job with both hands, and he's done a fantastic job. I think sometimes clubs have to look at that and think, maybe we can get someone from inside and build up.
Talking of a guy that came from the inside, here is Sean Wayne talking with Steve Manning.
Well, Sean, congratulations, another Wembley, and it's going to repeat to 2013 against Hull.
Yeah, and I love the same result, but it's a massive challenge in front of us. They're flying at the minute. We need to be a lot better than what we was today, but we show some desire. In patches we're very, very good, and in patches we're a little bit dumb, so we made our work of it. But I think overall there's nobody could have any qualms with us being the winners.
You got a great start there, came back, but pardon the pun, come with the hour. Come with your great man, Mickey Mack.
Yeah, Mickey Mack was fantastic. I thought he had a great game. Ryan Sutton was great, and Tom Davis was good. But having them tries chalked off and tries questioned, he did have me thinking that it wasn't meant to be. But we found a way to get the win, and I think the difference in them was about right.
I suppose even more important and pleasing for you, especially in the second half of the performance, you kept them nil point as well.
Yeah, we did, and they're a good team. They brought one of the best wings in the NRL over for this game. Two NRL players, so it meant a lot to them, and they threw a lot at us, and we had a couple of tough calls with tries. So we was under the pump. But what my players have, the reason why I'm very, very proud of them is they have this unbreakable spirit, and to grind games out, and we needed that today, because Salford were very, very good. They showed a lot of desire, Salford, and we had to be very good to beat them.
So you'll sleep well tonight?
No, I'm actually going to clip the Leeds game tonight, so I won't have any sleep tonight, and then the players are in tomorrow, and it's going to be on to the Leeds game.
Interesting little insight there from Sean Wayne right at the end, because Steve Manning asked him, was he going to sleep well? And he said, no, he's back at work. He's going to be clipping that Leeds game. Obviously, we're going to play Leeds this coming weekend. And that just shows a rugby league coach's work is never done. You'd think that would be the perfect time to, sit down with a nice pint of mild or something. But no, he'll be there. He was there with his grapefruit juice clipping video of Leeds.
And that just shows what sort of man he is. He's focused, and they are the current holders of the Super League. They are the champions, and he wants to go back to Old Trafford. He wants to win that again. You know where his focus is now, and he will forget about Wembley. He won't be bothered about Wembley for another 3 weeks. He'll be concentrating on getting Wigan as high up and try and get into that semi-final, because they want to try and retain their crown as well, and that's what Sean Wayne's focus will be.
It'll be absolutely remarkable, won't it, if Wigan can lift this trophy from seventh spot after the regular season.
But if anyone can, Wigan could, for me.
Keeping you up to date with everything rugby league, this is the Final Hooter on Radio General.
So we've heard from both coaches from Salford Red Devils and Wigan Warriors. A resounding victory in the end for Wigan, who, like you said, adapted better to the game. And we now know who our Challenge Cup finalists are. It's Hull and it's Wigan. I, for God's sake, hope that it's not a repeat of 2013. That was the most boring, dullest, rubbishiest match that I've seen in ages.
I must admit, that was probably the worst final I've watched. I've only missed a couple since 1995, and that's got to be down there with probably one of the worst ever finals. But of course, 1984 was another Hull and Wigan match. Was it 85? Was it?
84.
Sorry, Widnes, wasn't 84 it?
84 was Widnes,
yeah,
wasn't
sorry,
it?
Sorry, 85. And of course, that was a cracking match, wasn't it? So we'll have a repeat of that one instead. But yeah, maybe with Hull FC winning.
Well, there'd be a Lulai on the field, wouldn't there? And there was a Lulai playing for Hull at the time.
Yeah, it'd be the opposite way around this time. But I'll be going to that final, and I can't wait. It's two big clubs with a good Challenge Cup history, so it should be a cracker.
Okay, let us move on, because, you know, the semi-finals, perhaps justifiably so, have taken up quite a bit of our time. But it's time to look at the Kingstone Press League One Super 8s. And some fantastic results here, by the way. Doncaster 24, Keithley Cougars 32. A couple of tries there for Bailey for the Cougars. And Matty Beharrell kicking 6 from 6 on, as far as goal kicking went. Newcastle Thunder 14, Workington Town 30. Those teams are going to be fed up of playing each other. I think it's either the third or fourth time that they've come up against each other this season. So they played like one of those strange home and away. Actually, they did go home and away in the league. I'm sure they played in the Cup as well. And now they've played in the Super 8. So, yeah, Workington coming out on top there. Whitehaven 2, Barrow 15. Low scoring, all points scored in the second half. So it was actually 0-0 at half time. How many games have you been to that was 0-0 at half time?
Not many. And I was keeping an eye on the score, obviously, on Sunday afternoon. And I was just wondering whether the reporter maybe wasn't putting the tries through or something like that. You know, I was trying to get the scores through, and I was double checking, and there wasn't any score. But, you know, both teams have been really good this season, and no surprise that was quite a close run thing.
Apparently, there was a bit of a breezy afternoon. I think that was what caused part of the problems, why both sides struggled to cope with it. And then eventually Barrow broke away and got themselves a couple of tries to Jared Stack and Ryan Fieldhouse, who has been a super signing, to be honest, for Barrow. He's really gained all his confidence back. He's playing really well at fullback for the Raiders. Yeah, you said both sides have been going superbly. We've got an automatic promotion spot from Kingstone Press League One, but we've got a playoff for second. And at the moment, there's nothing to choose at all other than point difference between Barrow and Whitehaven. They've got identical records, 16 games played, 13 wins, a draw and 2 losses. I'd like to just say here, though, that that's some sort of turnaround from Barrow, because the last time they played against Whitehaven, which was just before the split in these eights, Whitehaven won 32-6. So that's one heck of a turnaround, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you can have those games where, you know, one team just is brilliant and the other one just dips a little bit in form. But, you know, as you mentioned, that could be another big game in the next few weeks as well, couldn't it, when they could play each other in the playoff.
You never know. I think York City Knights might have a thing or two to say, though, having said that. And they've come up with, for me, the result of the season so far. They've beaten Toronto Wolfpack 26 points to 16. And just everything about the game, everything about the club in the build-up to that game was just perfect. You know, they marketed it. They sold tickets galore. They managed to open 2 stands on the ground, which I don't think has happened in goodness knows how long since they've been playing there. And, you know, they played an attractive brand of rugby to actually nil Toronto at half-time.
Yeah, and especially with the way Toronto have been just walking over teams, you know, in their home matches, and even in some of the away matches as well. Again, I was keeping an eye on that score, and, you know, it was 6-0, it was 12-0. You're thinking, they'll come back in a minute, next minute, half-time, 18-0. And then first 6 minutes of the second half, Toronto did come back, and you thought, oh, I'll just walk this now. And, you know, York come back, and, you know, they managed to get another couple of scores and, you know, put the result to bed, which was fantastic. And as you said, it's been marketed really well. How many times have you seen a club offering cheap tickets or free kids' places or any sort of offer to get people in, and then they play absolutely awful, and then and then it just doesn't work, you know? And it was a big risk to take, really, you know, to really put it out there, because they could have been on the end of a real hiding in this game. And I think a lot of people, you know, if Toronto would have gone and maybe put 40, 50 points on York, nobody would have been surprised. So for them to really put it all out on this big game and using the Wolfpack as well. But yeah, you've just got to go out there and actually get the result. And, you know, it's a phenomenal result for York City Knights. And they've just got to build on this now. It's not worth beating Toronto this week, and then next week, you know, this week coming, sorry, losing, and just going back to how it was. They've got to build on this result.
Yeah, but I also think as well that there's a they've set a blueprint here for this game, and it should be adopted for every game. Just because it's Toronto that's in town, it doesn't mean that, you know, there's any less significance, does it? You know, if you've got Workington Town that's coming to there, or, you know, you're playing against Hemel Stags, for example, or something like that, you'd want there to be the same type of build-up and the buzz, because they've started something now. You know, it happened with Keighley in the 1990s, didn't it? It happened with Bradford, where they just built everything up and up and up. It's happened to a certain extent at Warrington since they've made the Aliwell Jones, and every time, you know, there's a game here in Warrington, it's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, and there's always that advert, or, you know, people using social media to put it out there. You know, even the other week when we were at the DW for Warrington, for Wigan and Warrington, and there wasn't really a lot on the game itself because of the positions of both of the teams. So really, it was a bit of a sort of a dead rubber. But, you know, Wigan built it up as, you know, big game week, and Warrington had built it up Wigan week. You know, and both clubs really tried to push it, especially being on a Thursday evening as well, and just to get, and they probably did get a little few more fans than they probably wouldn't have, you know, and that's what they've got to do. And, you know, it's difficult for the League One clubs, but as you mentioned, someone's tried something there and it's worked. So let's see whether other people can copy it. And especially like a Whitehaven and a Barrow, you know, massive derby match. You know, if they'd really, really pushed that out there, maybe they could have got a few more fans as well. And of course, there's a, you know, there'll be a Workington Whitehaven coming up and a Barrow Workington. So, you know, if they can use the same idea, then, you know, push the game in Cumbria a bit more.
Just out of interest, Whitehaven had just over 1,000 people there for their game against Barrow. Probably deserves double that, at least, I would imagine, you know, because it sounds like that was a real tough tussle. Into the Kingstone Press League One Shield in the first round, we had a victory for Hemel Stags. It's been a long time in coming. It's not a regular occurrence, this. It was only Hemel Stag's second win of the season. They beat Oxford 32-26, so well done to them, and particularly their goal kicker Vincent, 6 out of 6, and he scored a try as well. Hunslet had a massive win, 56-10 against Coventry Burrs, so they have moved into pole position in the League One Shield. So you'd I think they've become the favourite, really, if you like, for that particular competition. That's a top two playoff, by the way, out of those eight. North Wales Crusaders, who had been, I suppose, in pole position, they got a towel in. London Scholars beat them 40-12, which is a fantastic result for London Scholars. Jaimel Coleman, absolutely outstanding. And he's one of these guys that has suffered his first year of injuries. I think but for injuries, he would probably be a lot higher up the rugby league food chain, if you like, because he's a really decent player, lovely pair of hands, great kicking game. Bottom reserve, him, my second biggest cheer of the week, to the South Wales Ironmen. Now they're becoming West Wales from next season. They've moved all the way over to Llanelli. Have I said that right this time?
I think you didn't get it. It should have been Llanelli.
Right, okay, I'll get it right one of these days. But they've moved over to Llanelli, and they beat Gloucestershire All Golds 28-20. Now, they've totally revamped the side from the start of the season. There's been so many players that have left. There's been so many players that signed on deadline day in rugby league. They signed 12 players. You know, so they were perhaps amongst the busiest of teams that there is. So
it's getting them to gel though as well, you know.
It is, and they've not had that long there. So, you know, well done, and I'm sure every one of the 212 that was in attendance there really, really enjoyed it.
And you can say, I was there.
I'd say I was there, yeah. Because, I mean, to be honest, that's only South Wales' second win of the season too. So, you know, well played to them. I think we've got a lot of fascinating rugby to look forward to over this next week. I know we haven't really touched upon the Super 8s. We've, you know, barely mentioned the qualifiers. We've not even touched upon the Championship Shield. But before we go, my third loud cheer of the week goes the way of Swinton Lions. I'm absolutely made up for Stuart Littler and the boys that they're going to continue. They're such a historic club. There's so many good people that are involved down there at Swinton. And again, during the course of their eights campaign, I would urge as many Super League fans over, certainly on the red side of the Pennines, to get over to a game if you can, because that's going to really help them out.
And they have done. I mean, I noticed people were tweeting, you know, the last game that they played, and you know, there was Warrington fans there, sat with Wigan fans, and you know, doesn't normally happen that too well, but you know, but everyone's, you know, building to try and, you know, get as much. And of course, with the, you know, with the games, a lot of the Super League games being on sort of Thursdays, Fridays, and even these middle eight qualifiers being on Saturdays, there's nothing else to do on a Sunday, is there? So why not get down to Swinton and cheer them on and put some money in the coffers?
The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.